Nicole Brandon with Unlimited Life, and welcome to the show. It's always such a privilege and such a pleasure to do this show because I really strive to bring you the very best information and tools and techniques to really lead an unlimited life. And today's guest is so astonishing. We're going to talk about alternative health and healing today, and especially at a time that we're coming into the winter season where people are getting flu and they're sick and people's arthritis is kicking in. And so how do we literally stay healthy? How do we live that vital and that vibrant life without piling on pills and taking drugs and constantly being under medical care? And how do you find a doctor that really cares about you and your vitality, your life, truly the essence of your life and your health, and how that really have that optimal happily ever after that we talk about all the time? So today's guest is Kathy Lipman, and she's a doctor, and she first studied conventional medicine, and she received her MD in 1973 from the University of Chicago, from the Pritzker School of Medicine. And after a pediatric internship at Los Angeles County USC Medical Center, she studied adult and child psychiatry at UCLA, and she was board certified in each one of those specialties, if you can understand how difficult that is. And soon after that, she really became dissatisfied with the limitations of purely psychiatric focus, and she changed her practice from psychiatry to alternative medicine in order to address the whole individual. And that was 30 years ago. So she really is specialized in this field. She really has taken the time and the care and the research and the wisdom and the know-how to really focus on someone's life and someone's health and someone's wellness. She is referred to as a medical resource in books authored by Suzanne Summers, Ageless Breakthrough and Knockout. She is also a medical resource in Jenny McCarthy's book, Mother Warriors, and on McCarthy's Generation Rescue website as well. She is also a regular guest on television and radio shows. And when I met her, it was so interesting because we were at a table and we were at an event, and I mean, really a full table of very, very, very thoughtful minds and very savvy business people and people that with just extraordinary sharp wits and so much this incredible insatiable urge for knowledge. And people were just throwing questions at her, and without even a second thought, without a breath, she had an answer, and not just an answer, but something that really could change your life. And I was so excited and so mesmerized in listening to her. And I thought, wow, this woman really knows. She's in the know. There's a difference between studying, and there's a difference between certification, and there's a difference between practicing, and then there's a difference between taking all of that information and being able to really share it in a way that can change your life and change your health. And she really is that pinnacle person. So we are so privileged, so blessed, honored today to bring on today's guest, Dr. Kathy Lipman. So, Kathy, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Nicole. And I want you to know how much I appreciate the information you provide your listeners.
Oh, it's extraordinary because it's really my goal to help people live that unlimited life. And especially, as I was saying, right now, it's amazing because it just so happens that you're coming on right at the beginning of flu season,
right,
where all of these people are sneezing and coughing and kids are home from school. And so there has to be a better way. So first, tell us, how did you start? How did you choose alternative medicine? And then where do we begin in our own lives?
I began to be interested. I've always been interested in wellness and feeling healthy. And some of my teachers in my residency and fellowship were also oriented that way. And serendipitously, I was introduced to people in the alternative medicine field as I had my own children who were young at the time, because I didn't want to just throw medications at them. And these people, like Janet Zand, for example, and others in the field here, unfortunately Dr. Zand is no longer in California, but she's still providing information for people, showed me that using alternative methods, using natural methods, being careful about what you eat, and acknowledging all aspects of the individual could really increase the immune system, increase the strength of the body, whether child, adult, or senior. And it went from there, and I started taking courses. It was like going back to graduate school again. And there's so much out there, and I think it speaks to the creative ability of the human being. We are amazing creatures, and I firmly believe and have been shown over and over again that if you give the body, which is very intelligent, the resources it needs, the body can cure or at least modify just about any kind of illness.
That's fantastic. And I remember that we were sitting, you know, having dinner, and you were talking about white chestnut.
Oh, yes.
And so it's something I had never heard of before. And so are there, and we will talk about white chestnut, so many other things, but how does one begin? How does one find a journey to wellness?
Well, fortunately, there are many sites on the internet now that were not available 30 years ago, providing information, whether it's about homeopathy, about Bach flower remedies, which is what you were just mentioning, white chestnut is a Bach flower remedy, whether it has to do with acupuncture and herbs. It's hard to know where to go, you know, hard to know which one to believe, but I think there are some excellent people out there, excellent sites, and often the sites are actually associated with universities and medical schools. So theoretically, that's one source. I think that one source that I commonly look at, for example, is Dr. Joe Mercola's site. His is full of information. There was another one, and it just went out of my mind. When I think of it, I'll let you know.
Absolutely. No, I mean, it's so wonderful to have an alternative. And we're also talking about when is the right time to find a new doctor. And that was when a doctor is telling you you're just getting old or what those symptoms are. And so can you talk a little bit about that?
Certainly. In fact, that's probably what I do most of, is people come to me with chronic conditions. They're told they just have to live with it or you're just getting old. And through methods of environmental medicine, which I can explain in a moment, alternative medicine, and these complementary approaches, people find that they don't have to just survive. They don't have to just put up with their symptoms, but they can actually thrive, possibly mitigating the symptoms or even getting rid of them entirely. One of my favorite examples is the woman who brought me her mother-in-law, who basically had been given up by conventional doctors who didn't know. And let me just say from the outset that I have nothing against conventional medicine and conventional doctors, because I think they want to help people. That's why they go into medicine. But unfortunately, their training is limited, so they're limited in what they have to offer the patient. This woman brought me her mother-in-law, who basically was in her upper 70s and mostly just sitting in a chair all day long, not having much energy, not much interest in other people. And frankly, all she needed was some nutrition. We put her on a very good multivitamin mineral, some essential fatty acids, and tweaked her diet. And within a month, she was doing so much better. In fact, chasing some of the guys in her senior citizen's home. So,
I love that. Oh, that's so
special. And she
special.
Hasn't
that's
stopped yet.
Wonderful. That's really fantastic. Oh, that's wonderful. And so when people come to you, so let's choose some things. How about arthritis? Since that seems to be a very common ailment. Can nutrients or vitamins or minerals or the remedies that you're, the essence of remedies that you're talking about, help something like arthritis?
Yes. It's important, first of all, to, and this is another one of my pet phrases is to remind people that they are individuals, and what may be causing a problem with one person may not be the cause of another person's problem. Another way of looking at that is what works for one person may not work for another person. The old expression, one man's pudding is another man's poison. Anyway, so with arthritis, what can happen is that people might have sensitivities to foods, for example. Commonly, what are called the nightshade vegetables, which are eggplant, white potato, bell pepper, and tomato, sensitize people and can contribute to arthritis. So sometimes it's as simple as if they get off those foods, their arthritis goes away or at least diminishes significantly.
And what was that list? Eggplant, white potato, and what else?
Eggplant, white potato, in contrast to sweet potato and yams. Bell peppers and tomatoes. It happens that tobacco is also in that list, but I don't think of tobacco as a food.
Right.
So that can make a big difference. Another issue for many people is some people will pick up a parasite sometime in their travels or just going to a restaurant where the staff didn't clean their hands very well. Parasites are recognized as something that people commonly pick up over the years just from living. We don't tend to think of ourselves in the United States as having parasites, and when I was in medical school, we didn't learn about them very much. But in general, it's recognized that it's not that hard to pick up a parasite. A parasite actually may live in a person and the person not notice it until the person starts to have symptoms, which could occur years later. But the parasite has been like a drain on the immune system and the person's body for many years. And if that person's resistance starts to diminish or their nutritional status diminishes, if they're under a tremendous amount of stress, the effects of the parasite could be noticed in one way, for example, as arthritis. The parasite might also contribute to the food sensitivities that I was just talking about. So that's another issue. And then there are issues, especially as we get older, nutrient insufficiency, and I use the word insufficiency because most people in the United States are not really deficient in nutrients. We're just lacking in the amount that we need, in contrast to people who are starving in other parts of the country and other parts of the world. So those can also be issues. And there are remedies that can help reduce the pain, reduce the inflammation of arthritis.
Mm-hmm. And how does somebody know if they have a parasite? How would you know?
Then you need to go to physician who can help you do proper laboratory testing for parasites. It's very common. The testing has improved tremendously over the years. Parasites can be very hard to find, and I would suggest if somebody wants to ask their doctor for a test, besides doing a stool test where people take a sample of the stool and look under a microscope looking for a parasite in the gut, there are now what are called antibody tests to the parasites. In other words, the body brings up an immune response if there is a parasite in the form of antibodies, and the laboratory can look for those specific antibodies to the parasites. If they're present, it suggests the person has one, and then the person can decide if they want to use standard antibiotics. There are specific antibiotics, often for specific parasites, or a more herbal general treatment, depending upon the parasite.
That's just remarkable. I mean, that we can even have something and that we're unaware of it, or that something could be inside of us and feeding on our nutritional, system.
Right. Well, it's why many more traditional societies in the Orient and in South America recommend that people do a cleanse of some sort. It can be a colon cleanse or a whole body cleanse every 6 months to a year, because who knows what we pick up And we encourage those things to go away so they don't bother us.
And then, it's, you know, we talk about now it's flu season, and so many of our children are home from school because they're not feeling well, or kids share colds, or then the parents get it, and it becomes a vicious cycle in people's houses. And, do we need flu shots, or is there a way to prevent getting sick, or if you feel a cold coming on, is there something that we should do?
I don't recommend flu shots myself. I don't take them. I just have the impression very often that they're more of a burden on the immune system than a benefit, and there's some question as to how beneficial they really are. Having said that, I do have friends who say that the flu shots have really made a difference for them. So I don't, I just tell people what else is available to them. And in fact, on my blog, I have this information, but let me mention to people that I think there are a number of ways to help reduce their flu risk. The first, and some of what I'm going to say people don't like to hear because, you know, we get established with our habits and we think, well, we can just take a pill and take care of ourselves. But it really helps to establish habits that are supportive of our system. So the first one is to get enough sleep. People often don't realize that when we sleep is when our body heals. And if you don't give your body the number of hours needed, the time needed to do that healing, you're not going to be as well as you could be. And I think that it's especially important in our 24/7 society to go against some of the societal norms, which are you're not productive if you're not working and only sleeping 4 hours a night, for example. I do recommend, on average, about 8 hours of sleep a night, even for adults, and certainly more so for children. So that's the first thing. Secondly, okay, is that people need to reduce how much sugar they're eating. And I'm sure you have spoken many times about the effects of sugar on our bodies. It is a big burden on the body. Sugar, as in the white cane sugar, the white stuff I call it, that is in our cookies and our cakes and our muffins and our donuts and in lots of sauces that we have. If people look on the label of the foods they're buying, the processed foods they're buying, they would be shocked to find out how much sugar is added to the foods they're eating. And I say that because that's what people tell me. They're shocked, you know, there's sugar in this and there's sugar in that. And what sugar does is it really suppresses the immune system for a few hours. I tell people it's like making the white cells, those cells that help us fight and function, fight infection, it makes the cells drunk so that they don't operate as well for a few hours. Well, imagine if you're having a little sugar with your cereal in the morning for breakfast, and you have a cookie at lunch, and you have a little ice cream at supper time. You're constantly pushing down your immune system, so it cannot work as well. And I recommend to people, really, and I'm sure I know that you've spoken about this also, the importance of not eating so much processed food, the importance of not eating sugar all the time. If you want, save it for really special occasions. Have a little bit at a birthday or an anniversary celebration, for example. The third thing is vitamin C. We are one of only four mammals that doesn't make our own vitamin C. You know how dogs and cats can go out and pick things up off the ground and not get sick? We don't do that. For some reason, guinea pigs are one of the other mammals, and I apologize, I forget what the other two are. But vitamin C is so important. It helps us foment an antiviral immune system, for example, and helps our heart health and cardiovascular health. Contrary to popular opinion, orange juice is not a good source of vitamin C.
Really?
Because it's... Yes, because as soon as you cut into that orange, within about half an hour, much of the vitamin C is dissipated. So it tastes good, but it's not a good source. You know, it's one source of fluids, I suppose. And the other thing about vitamin C is that a person's need is really individual, how much one needs. So I have some people who tolerate about 250 milligrams a day, and I have other people who tolerate about 10,000 milligrams a day. And the way to find out how much is too much for you is to take it until you get loose stools or even diarrhea. At that level, you know you're taking a little too much, and you back off from there. And the lower level, the lower amount is the amount that's good for your body. And as I said, it really varies to the individual. I have a dear friend who told me that her grandson came to visit one time. And after 2 days of being with her, he was about 11 at the time, he broke out in chicken pox. Well, this young man normally took about 10,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day. That was his dose. With the chicken pox, or with any viral illness and commonly other illnesses, our vitamin C need increases. Well, his need went up to 40,000 milligrams a day.
Wow.
Above that,
remarkable.
he started getting diarrhea. And he only needed it for a couple of days. And then he had to back off because his body said, okay, we have enough. And it let him know in no uncertain terms. And he got through the chicken pox in a shorter amount of time without any difficulties. Now, I'm not promising that for everybody, but I use that as an example of how much our need for vitamin C can increase when we're fighting a bug.
So if orange juice is not the best source of vitamin C, do you need to take tablets or are there fruits or vegetables that can provide us the vitamin C that we're looking for?
Well, fresh fruits and vegetables can provide it. I actually recommend, in order to get enough in, that people take it doesn't have to be expensive. It can just be ascorbic acid even. Now, some people do find ascorbic acid a little burning for their GI tract, and there are other forms of vitamin C that are milder. But just your average vitamin C tablet can work. I caution people about some of the products that combine vitamin C and other vitamins to check the label, because often there's a lot of fructose or sugar in them.
And what about the emergency C, those little packets that they sell in the health food stores?
Yeah, they have a lot of fructose in them. They're good for, a certain amount, and they're handy to carry. Excuse me, I'm taking a sip of water. But they also have fructose in them. And we can get into another topic, which I don't want to at the moment. I'm not sure of the origin of that fructose. I don't know. But fructose in general comes from corn, and most of the corn in the United States is genetically modified. So that would be one problem with it. And it's a fair amount of sugar in there. They do have a mineral supplement, an electrolyte supplement, I believe, that does not have the fructose in it, but I don't think it has the vitamin C in it either. So one or two isn't so bad, but to start to get all the vitamin C that you might need when you're getting sick, I think you're better off getting a powder that is just vitamin C if you want to mix it into a liquid, or a tablet or a capsule.
That's such good advice. That really is. And then you were talking about your blog, that, you know, this information is on your blog. So how does somebody read your blog and follow you and your wisdom?
Staying Healthy in a Challenging World is the name of my blog, or people can
great.
Just... Yeah, thank you. Something, we have the same goal in mind, unlimited life, right? Encouraging people to develop their full potential. People can Google me. They can actually just go DocLip, D as in David, OCLIPP, that's two P's as in Peter. That will direct them to references to me on Google. And the other possibility is to go to my website, which has a link to my blog, and that's www.kathylipmanmd.com. And Kathy is C-A-T-H-I-E, Lippmann is LIPPMAN, M-A-N. So thank you.
Of course. No, thank you. I love that, staying helping in the challenging world. This is a great title. That's so fantastic. And
do you want
when,
some more information about flu, reducing
yes.
flu risk?
Oh, yes,
okay.
Please.
There was a study done a number of years ago in Japan where children who developed measles were given really high doses of vitamin A, and that's vitamin A, not beta carotene. They were given anywhere from 100,000 to 400,000 units per day, and those children had a significantly reduced duration and severity of the measles. So at the very first sign of an infection and a viral illness, I recommend people take about 100,000 units of vitamin A just for 2 or 3 days. They shouldn't continue it for a long period of time because it's possible to have too much vitamin A and get sick from it. But for a few days, it also can really support the immune system.
Oh, gosh, that's wonderful.
Then there's vitamin D, you know, that wonderful new vitamin, shall we say, that's been around for so long, and we're finally starting to appreciate the importance of it. And I know that there are many doctors who will suggest that people take 5,000 or even 10,000 units, sometimes more, of vitamin D for the first few days of an infection to help improve their immune system.
Writing.
Oh, good.
Which is, oh, absolutely, because I think it's just so important. And then do people come to you because they're sick, or do people come to you to prevent getting sick, or do people need yearly checkups to be able to stay healthy and well? And what is the best prescription
yes, yes, and
for
yes.
wellness? Okay, so talk about
so
that.
So people, some people come who are sick. And very often they have been to multiple doctors, and the doctors are trying to help them, but they say, you know, your lab tests are fine and your physical is fine. You're just getting old, or you just have to live with it. And these people know they don't feel well. What's going on? And I often am able to help them figure out what's going on. I use an FDA-registered device that I know that you're familiar with. It helps me to screen non-invasively for allergies, infections, toxicities, and deficiencies. And with the information people give me and figuring out what's going on, I will often recommend other laboratory testing or just recommend nutrients and homeopathics. I use a lot of homeopathy. And a majority of the time, people get better and they feel better. Partly because, I'm taking the approach of what resources does that person's body need in order to manage what is going on so that they can feel better. And I'm grateful that most people do feel better. So that's number one. Number two, I do have some people come who are pretty healthy and they just want to make sure they stay that way. And the third thing is I do recommend an annual checkup. Because very often we forget what's affected us. Some people will forget that, you know, they had a flu and it came at a difficult time for them, and it really took a long time for them to recover from it, for example. They're fine now, but it took them a long time to recover, and maybe they just need a special boost so that the next time the flu doesn't bother them so much. Or maybe they've had a tremendously stressful year, which they minimize, because we tend to minimize these kinds of stresses in our society. But the evidence of the stress is there in their body. I have a saying in my treatment room that says, when sorrow has no outlet in tears, other organs weep.
Oh.
And that's what happens with us. If we don't acknowledge our feelings and our emotions and what we're going through and get support, often it can have a physical toll on us. So there are many reasons for people to come and to see, if not me, you know, some practitioner who takes this kind of approach, because I know you have people listening from all over.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And this is such wonderful advice. And then one of the things that we were talking about when we were having dinner was sleep. And you were saying how 8 hours sleep for adults is so vitally important, and even more so for children. But yet so often when we're talking to people, especially very successful business people, sleep is at the bottom of their list in their life.
Exactly.
And if they are sleeping, even if they're sleeping a few hours, they have so much difficulty sleeping because their mind is still going. It's doing business. It's, you know, even people that are running errands in their head and have all these things, or even, you know, lots of children, and they're navigating their schedules. And so when they're closing their eyes, even though the body is lying down, their brain is still working full time. And so how do we help people have a restful, peaceful sleep?
Well, on a broad societal basis, I think it would really help if we gave people permission to take care of themselves instead of just saying, oh, you can do everything you need to do and just take a pill to take care of whatever comes up. But we're not going to get into that right now. I think it's valuable for people to do some kind of meditation or relaxation technique. There are so many wonderful techniques out there, and even for, I have people who don't like to do those, but they'll go for a walk, for example, for 15, 20 minutes once or twice a day, or they'll sit and listen to music that really soothes their soul, or they'll play games with somebody, you know, whatever it is, to take a break, to tell the body, okay, we're stopping for a moment, we're regrouping, and I'm giving you the chance to do what you need to support me in all this. I'm saying the person is talking to their body, right? And this is where we came up with the comment about white chestnut, which is a wonderful Bach flower remedy. To give people some background, Edwin Bach was a physician in England several decades ago who found that the essences of different flowers could help different psychological states. And one of those is white chestnut, which is wonderful for that constant mental chatter that does not turn off. And very often it can be very helpful for people to take some white chestnut, usually two or three times during the day. The white chestnut is available at a good health food store. You put a couple drops in liquid and sip it, for example, or drink it if you don't have time to sip it, which is part of what we're talking about. And it can help that situation. I think it's really important for people to check their diets and make sure that they're not eating or drinking a lot of caffeine or other kind of stimulant. People are aware of this in coffee and some green teas, for example, and some teas in general. They forget that chocolate has a very high caffeine content, and eating too much chocolate can have the same effect on keeping you up and keeping you overstimulated.
And does alcohol do the same thing, people that have a drink with dinner, you know, that they might not have coffee after their dinner because they say, oh, the coffee will keep me up, but will the alcohol?
For some people, it would. And the best way for a person to find out is, if they have questions, to stop the food, for example, for a week or two and see if it makes a difference. And it can really give themselves a chance. It can take a few days to do that. So that's why I said a week or two. And I think the average person, unless if they have an addiction, really should be able to do that. There are some homeopathic remedies for people who fall asleep, don't have trouble falling asleep, but then wake up, you know, and they sit up sharp and their eyes are wide open and they can't get back to sleep. One of those, if you go to a health food store, you can get the names of them.
the sit-ups, that's sort of like the zombie.
Yes.
Sounds like someone that sits up straight and they can't get back to sleep. That's very funny, just the image of that. And then I have a question. We have a bridal show on Sundays, and so a lot of times we're also dealing with new mothers. And so can a diet and what people are eating, can it affect the mother's milk or the baby in the womb? But I know that, can the baby become restless because of the mother's diet or because of lack of nutrients?
That's a very good question. It's not my area of expertise. I will say that I have seen that mothers who tend to eat too much sugar and too many processed foods and are not eating a healthful diet will tend to have what's called dysbiosis or overgrowth syndrome, commonly known as candida, where they have overgrowth of opportunistic organisms like yeast or fungi in their gastrointestinal tract, and that really affects the mother, and it becomes a vicious cycle. It also can affect the child to some extent from the standpoint the mother might develop sensitivities to foods that she's eating, which potentially could affect the child depending upon the physiology of the child. And it certainly can affect the comfort level of the pregnancy. And I'm speaking about this from personal experience as well as helping other women. My first pregnancy, I was, at the first trimester especially, I was so sick. And it was most unpleasant. And I had no energy. By the time of my second pregnancy, I had learned about foods that I was sensitive to, wasn't eating them, and also had significantly reduced my sugar intake, and my second pregnancy went much more smoothly. Now, I'm sure the average obstetrician will say, well, the second pregnancy might have just gone more smoothly anyway. No, but there are many, many women who, using the proper diet for themselves, can help themselves and their baby get through a pregnancy much more easily and healthfully.
Mm-hmm. It sounds so splendid. And, you know, we look at hereditary, you know, diseases or, you know, different food allergies. And can all of that be passed down through generations? If your mother or your father is allergic to potatoes, can you be allergic to potatoes too? Or is, like you're saying, each person has their own individual body archetype?
Well, I think each person has their own individual physiology. There obviously are going to be hereditary genetic tendencies. So, it's, you know, if you have a family where the both parents, for example, have red hair, or one person really has red hair and blue eyes, there's a much increased chance that one of their offspring is going to have that as well. And we know from studies in the past that people who have red hair or blonde hair, blue eyes, fair skin, tend to be more sensitive. They also might be more intelligent. Whether that has been...
Well, thank you for that. No.
Not necessarily, but anyway. But they do tend to be more sensitive. And... So it is possible, I would imagine, if a mother is eating a lot of foods or a lot of a food that she is sensitive to without being aware that she's sensitive to it, that she could induce some sensitivities in a child who is prone to that.
That makes sense. Absolutely. Because, you know, when you hear, you know, of allergies passed on or of different symptoms passed on, then you always wonder, is there a way to break free from that cycle? Is there a way to, you know, have your own individual wellness, your own individual health, your own individual, as we talked about, that unlimited life and, you know, ways to enjoy it? And then do you think that each person then, if you're sensitive automatically, that certain, as you talk about the Bach remedies, or that we talk about alternatives, that by taking drops or by taking supplements, that we can be on override?
That we can be on override?
Yes, that our system will reboot, or that we will...
So that we would reduce the sensitivities or reduce the symptoms from it? Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Oh, definitely. And there are many different approaches. That's, again, that's one thing that's so marvelous about human beings is there's no just one right approach. We're such adaptable organisms, you know, that's why we have so many different healing styles, whether it's acupuncture or homeopathy or other herbs or nutrients. You know, there are so many approaches. So, yes, there's a lot that can be done for us when we're sensitive to reduce the sensitivities and to reduce specifically what we're sensitive to.
And now we hear very often in today's world about dairy intolerance. Is that something that you deal with at all?
Oh, yes. And, in fact, again, probably related to what I was talking to before, Western Europeans tend to be, there's an increased risk, I should say, of sensitivity to milk casein, which is one of the proteins in milk, and they often do better with goat or sheep dairy. I do a lot of work with dairy because it's such a big problem for people. Another issue is that dairy is one of the most allergenic foods there is, and it's certainly one of the most mucus-producing foods there is. So when somebody comes in who's complaining of chronic postnasal drip and chronic upper respiratory symptoms, one of the first questions is, how much dairy do you eat? And if they're eating a lot of dairy, then educating them about the importance of reducing, if not cutting out, milk, for example. And I'm pretty strict about milk because I think milk is meant for calves. And frankly, most of the people who come to me don't look like a calf. In fact, I've never had a calf come ask me for advice. But anyway, sorry for a note of frivolity there.
Funny.
But milk really can be associated with so many problems. I remember when I was a child, my father was a pediatrician, and he told me about one of his patients who was a teenager with terrible skin problems. And this kid was drinking about 2 quarts of milk a day. And he told him, get off the milk. And this was before there was as much attention to sensitivities as there is now. And the young man did, and sure enough, his skin cleared up.
Really? That's
yes.
Amazing.
Yeah. I have a vivid memory of that.
That's really amazing.
So I'm going to use that to say sensitivities can be associated with absolutely any symptom. And for example, there is a kind of anemia that people can develop, that children develop who drink too much milk, probably in part because they're not getting other nutrients because they're drinking so much milk and eating only dairy. But also it might be because the milk somehow or other is also interfering with their ability to produce the red cells that they need and hemoglobin and all that for their health.
Just astonishing. It's so much information. And I love that you know all of this. And I love that you have a blog and that you're able to share it in such a clear and concise way that it really can help people. I mean, even just what you're talking about, vitamin D. I mean, it's just not something that we naturally think about. Or I'm sure that when people are told to take vitamin C, you don't know how many milligrams or what is the right kind to buy or where you even begin. And I certainly didn't know. You know, I always thought that by squeezing my own oranges that I was getting all the vitamin C I needed.
Well, if you're squeezing your own, you are getting a good source of vitamin C. Whether it's all that you need, I don't know. But the other, you know, one other aspect of it is when you squeeze the orange, and then I would hope you also eat the orange, including the white stuff inside the peel, because that's full of biotin. And vitamin C is a big complex. It's not just ascorbic acid. There are many aspects to many different chemicals, shall we say, for a whole vitamin C. And we do tend, and I'm sure you've had shows about this, we do get better nutrition when we take the whole vitamin. or a whole food, because they're going to have the vitamins and the minerals that we need. There are, you know, when people talk about minerals, they think about calcium and magnesium and boron and a few others. There are probably over 20 to 30 at least minerals that our bodies need. We don't need most of them in very large amounts. Small amounts do it, you know, but we do need them. And a lot of people don't get them from the food they're eating.
Does that include the skin of like an orange or the skin of an avocado, or is just the fruit inside?
It's the fruit inside plus the, and I'm blocking on the name of it, I'm sorry.
The white stuff.
The white stuff, yes.
But not the skin, not the outside skin
Doesn't
of
the
orange
the
or the avocado, okay.
Although it is, the skin of the orange and the lemon is wonderful zest when you're cooking, you know. But that's another issue.
Absolutely. And then is it better to have an orange or a grapefruit or a pineapple? Is one a better source of vitamin C than the other?
That's a very good question, and I don't have an answer for you. I don't know. And it also is going to depend upon what you tolerate. The assumption is you tolerate all three.
That's true, yes. No, because, you know, I know that, you know, sometimes you know, you'll crave a certain, you know, food. And do you know where that comes from, the craving, why you would want a grapefruit and not an orange, or why you would want
the general rule of thumb is that person is craving something that their body needs. So my suggestion would be don't limit yourself to only one, but sample all three. Or rotate how you eat them. Also because, especially nowadays, we don't know how the food has been grown. We don't know the health of the soil in which it's been grown. And even if it's organic, one farmer's soil may have more nutrients of a certain kind in it than another's. So I think it's good to get a variety.
And so is it better to buy something that says organic on it, an organic apple, compared to another apple that's sitting at Whole Foods that looks all shiny and bright?
Definitely, because even though there are certain pesticides and fertilizers that are allowed under the organic label, for the most part, the organic apple is not going to have the range of pesticides and chemicals that might be toxic for our bodies that the organic one does. And as a result, also as a part of that, the organic farmer tends to nourish the soil with more than just nitrogen and phosphorus, and I forget what the third mineral is that farmers tend to use. We need many minerals, and the organic farmer is more likely to use compost and other products that will nourish and provide a more nutritious soil for the food grown on it. And that's what we count on to get our nutrients, ideally, is the food we're eating. And it's only as nourishing as the soil it's grown in. So farmers are very important people.
Yes. No, they really are. Absolutely. No, I love this information. I mean, it's so important, and everything organic. I mean, people now talk about deodorant, you know, that has chemicals that can harm you, and it's better to use salt tablets. Or, I mean, there's so many chemicals in so many things, that, you know, shampoos and makeup that we put on our body and in our body on any given day.
You make a very important point. Since about World War II, industry has developed approximately 80,000, that's 80,000 new chemicals. And we've only tested a few. You can probably count them on your hands and feet in terms of the number that are tested. Maybe it's a little more than that. I might be exaggerating, but not much. To see if they're safe for us to use. And there are many examples where we're finding, well, maybe they really aren't so safe. You know, look at even cigarettes for so many years were so popular, and we learned that they're not healthy. And part of the source of the problem in cigarettes may very well be the pesticides that are used on tobacco. Enough studies are not done to test these products. Similarly, as you're saying, the phthalates and the other chemicals used in cosmetics and hair dyes and soaps, and we make ourselves look and smell pretty, but who knows what we're doing to ourselves. Our skin is our largest organ, and we absorb these chemicals, whatever we put on our skin, whatever we wash our clothes in, we absorb the chemicals through these, and they affect us. And I'm sure are contributing to the increase in cancer and to the horrible epidemic of autism and allergies and other problems that children are having nowadays.
It's just such a shame. I mean, all this information is so vital. It's so important. It really is. And especially in living a healthy life. And I love the fact that somebody can find you and change their life, that they could have gone to, you know, several doctors that have not been able to help them, that have just been a wall, been a barrier, been a gate, or said, you're getting old, you're getting whatever it is, that's just common. You're, you know, your mother had bunions, you have bunions, you know, this isn't good for you, like whatever it is. It's, I mean, it's very funny, but it's true that we're just sort of sloughed off sometimes and not really cared for in a tender, loving way, and not, like you're saying, individualized, being looked at as you as the whole person, not just the whole food, but what is the whole of you. And, you know, and as you were saying, somebody could have gotten sick last year, but they could have lost a spouse or a loved one, or they could have lost their job, and they could have gone through an emotional time, and the body was dealing with that as well. And so now they're in a different place, or they're in a different time, or they're in a different environment. People that move states, you know, you can move from here to, you know, in California to Arizona, and all of a sudden it's a different heat, it's a different environment, and how does the skin and the body react?
Right. Good point. Other things that, by the way, that people can get exposed to that they don't think about, and that is mold. If there is any leak, if there's any standing water where they live or where they work, they're getting undue mold exposure, which is not healthy for them, because molds put out chemicals that can affect us. Another issue is very often people will move into a new building or get new furniture. And new furniture, for example, any particle board is going to outgas formaldehyde for years afterwards, at least a couple of years. And that affects us. Or maybe they have a leak in their natural gas stove or furnace, so they're getting carbon monoxide poisoning. This sounds silly, but I see these cases over and over again, and these can contribute. So people need to be, if they're not feeling well, they shouldn't just stuff some aspirin or Tylenol down their throats to feel better, or just say, oh, I'm just tired, you know, I'm not sleeping enough. Please listen to your body, because our bodies talk to us. They tell us if we're not feeling well. They tell us, you know, by our not sleeping well. They tell us if we get rashes, if we get stomach aches. That's our body talking to us, saying, something's up. I need your attention. Please help me.
I love that. And it's so true, though. I mean, I know that my body all the time talks to me, and my mom, you know, used to get frustrated with me, because even when I was a little girl, I would say, you know, my body's feeling tired today, or my body, you know, wants salt, or my mom was like, but you're part of your body, you are your, you know, you're, but I would always explain it as my body was talking to me. That's how, you know, I would have a conversation.
That's marvelous.
You know, so that has always
been thinking you were.
Well, thank you. But that's always been something that's just been a part of me, and I, you know, still carry that on. And then how did you go from psychiatry And, you know, and so when you are working with people now, are you still listening as a psychiatrist to their emotional state and their desires and needs, and then bringing the wellness aspect into it?
Yes, you put that so well. I don't. Yes, I can't help but use my psychiatry. I don't do therapy anymore, and I generally don't prescribe psychiatric drugs. But this is what I was talking about before. I can listen to people, and very often we don't realize how much an event has affected us, for example. In homeopathy, there's an expression, not well since. And it means that a person went through some kind of trauma and might have recovered, but there was a lasting effect of that trauma. It could be as wonderful as getting married, which can be traumatic at times. It could be, as you had mentioned, you know, losing a spouse, moving, having an illness that took a long time to recover, something happening to one of your family or a dear friend. There are so many experiences, you know, having to go to war, being in the military, having a job that really affects you, whatever it is. And sometimes people will say, I really haven't been well since, a common one is, I haven't been well since I had the flu about 10 years ago. I feel as though I never really recovered. That's a common phrase we hear.
That's amazing.
So the question is, what do we do for that individual? And homeopathy and nutrients and can be very important. You know, I appreciate what you said before, because I know many of my colleagues think the way I do, that it's, my assistant describes what I do as like an old-fashioned doctor. You know, people have a lot of face time with me. I spend time with them because I find in 5 or 10 minutes, they're not going to tell me what is all the stuff that's going wrong with them that could be affecting them. And it takes time to listen, and doctors used to do that. Unfortunately, the system as it's set up now does not give doctors that permission. So I'm grateful to be part of a cadre of physicians who believe in listening to the patient, who believe that if you listen to the patient long enough, that patient will tell you what's wrong with them. And believe in what people tell you.
I love that. I mean, I absolutely love it who you are. I really do. I am so honored that we met. And in, like I said at the top of the show, I was listening to you, and it was effortless for you to respond to people. You listened so intently, and then your response was just like walking and breathing. You have so much knowledge of the body and health, and the way that you share your wisdom is just gorgeous. It really is. It's just breathtaking. So it's so nice to have you here.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity, and I appreciate your appreciating that, because it's been a long time to develop those skills and qualities, I must say, which I believe are important. Everybody deserves to be listened to. Everybody has a story.
Absolutely. And then I've got a question about medication. So a lot of people will be in a car accident, they'll have a cesarean, they'll have surgery, they have a herniated disc, whatever the problem is, you know, cataracts. But whatever the surgery is or whatever the problem is that they've gone into the hospital or that they've, you know, gone in for, or even, you know, something, you know, that's happening in their body, and they may have had a battery of drugs that were thrown at them over a couple months worth of time, and now they are on the mend, but yet all that medication is still inside.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are still lethargic, or they are, their joints are achy. And so how do you recover from medicine?
That's a very good question, and it's unfortunately a very common issue. There are many different ways of cleansing the body. And the person, the individual, let me backtrack for a moment. So what we do is we detoxify what we've taken in that seems to be an added burden on us. And many people who are very healthy, are wonderful detoxifiers. So they can get that kind of exposure, and within a couple of months, they've exercised it out of them. By the way, people who exercise and sweat is a wonderful way to detoxify, especially if they wash off the sweat afterwards, right, and get rid of the chemicals. Another way, and it's going to depend upon the basic health and strength level of that individual. If somebody is pretty strong, there are wonderful herbal combinations and homeopathic combinations that support the detoxifying organs and the organs, what are called the drainage organs, where we get rid of these things. So that means the lungs and the kidneys and the intestines and the skin. And there are wonderful remedies for supporting the body and getting rid of those chemicals. Somebody who is more fragile, shall we say, you don't give them as stressful a program as somebody else, but there's a wide range, in other words, of programs that can be used. There are wonderful powders, for example, now that people mix up and make shakes with that have nutrients in them, have herbal supports in them, to, again, help the body get rid of these materials. Enough sleep is very important. Again, remember, when we sleep is when we heal. So that gives the body a chance to work on detoxifying these chemicals. And then the person's diet can make a big difference. Greens, we don't eat very many greens and vegetables in our society. And when I speak to groups, and I love to, that's one way, by the way, I give back to the community, is I offer my services speaking to the public. So one of the things that always comes up when I speak is that people don't eat very many vegetables. If you say to them, name some vegetables, and they'll start saying, well, corn and potatoes and lettuce, iceberg lettuce, of course. That's a good start. and there are so many other vegetables that they could be eating. And we don't think about spices as being vegetables. So the more comprehensive a diet is, also that is going to help a person. I took another sip of water. There was a Dr. Henry Beeler. I apologize, who used to live in Pasadena and work in Pasadena, and he created what's called Beeler broth. And Beeler broth is taking green beans, parsley, zucchini. What am I forgetting? Green beans, parsley. Ugh, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the fourth element.
No.
Green beans. Anyway, parsley and green beans. Greens, right? Green vegetables, blanching them, and eating that and drinking that, and it's a wonderful support for electrolytes and, again, to support the body's ability to detoxify. So there's a lot that people can do. Another thing that's helpful in the sweating category is infrared saunas. And infrared saunas are not as hot as the average sauna when you go to a gym, but they contribute to the body sweating and helping to break down these chemicals and help the body get rid of them.
Oh, I love that idea. Absolutely. It's, do you happen to know the difference, or if one is better than the other, between a steam and a sauna when people are in the gym?
No, I don't. I know that I've had people who feel they do better with steam than with sauna, but the advantage of the dry heat is it really seems to get into the tissues better and support them. You can't have, I caution people about steam. You don't want them to burn themselves with the steam, which it is boiling water. But I know that steam baths surely feel good, so
right.
I don't know the difference.
Because it's, when you're talking about sweating, I know in the steam room you have all that, the toxins coming out, but somebody had told me once that you never want to take a steam when you have a cold. And I don't know if that's
why?
True or not. It's just something I remember from a long time ago.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, for that individual, maybe that person did not do well if they steamed when they took a cold. On the other hand, steaming, especially the nostrils and upper respiratory tract, can be very helpful when you're congested.
Mm,
and especially
great.
A lot of people like to add eucalyptus oil and other oils, you know, to help get them into the body because they can support the release of the congestion.
Right. I love steam. I do. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's my preference over sauna, and I'm always very happy to see a steam room.
Steam is great.
When I see one, we're friends. I'm always like, you know, a little happy camper when I see one. But it's when the idea of sweating out those toxins and those impurities, and even just people that sit for 20 minutes in Epsom salt bath,
right?
That you,
right.
You know, just having that, those impurities coming out of you. And then
they should be careful to wash it off afterwards, though.
The Epsom salt?
Yeah. But be sure that they should rinse, because when they're sitting in the bath, the water is sitting around them. There isn't a lot of movement. So when they get up, they still may have some of the chemicals on them, and they should quickly rinse it off.
Okay, good to know. Great advice. And one of our callers has asking about if you have an opinion about apple cider vinegar.
Wonderful stuff. apple cider vinegar is a very interesting product. It has been used very often in folk medicine for decades because it seems to support the body so well, help to get rid of infections, help to support the immune system so the body can get rid of infections, help get rid of arthritis, help to, it's used a lot nowadays to alkalinize. Also, for many people who are low in acid content in their stomachs and who don't tolerate hydrochloric acid supplements, apple cider vinegar can be very helpful for that. Like between a teaspoon and a tablespoon at the end of a meal can really help people digest their food much better, especially if they're eating protein. It's a wonderful remedy.
And what about, as you're talking about having something after a meal to help you digest, what about a papaya enzyme?
Papaya is good. It can help to some extent with breaking down protein, pepsin. It's a gentle enzyme. It's certainly a place where people can start. There are many people would find that papaya is good. They might need more help. So let's talk about digestion and enzymes in general, because
sure.
You're raising a very important point. And that is that very often, because of the way we have been eating and our exposure to chemicals over the years, people's digestive tracts are not working as well as we need them to be. They have been compromised. They don't have the bacterial content, the beneficial bacteria that we need to help us digest our food and to fight infection, help us make our B vitamins, for example. And certainly many people, as we get older, certainly starting from about our mid-20s, do not produce as much hydrochloric acid, which is essential for protein digestion and for setting up the whole acid-base balance of the rest of the gastrointestinal tract, helps to prevent infection. So people very commonly do much better if they take some digestive enzymes and some hydrochloric acid support, especially as they get older. Towards the digestive enzymes ideally are taken at the beginning of the meal to help us digest the food, as I say, as it comes down the pike, and the hydrochloric acid towards the end of the meal to give us the chance to make whatever hydrochloric acid of our own, we would. Now, people might be thinking, well, wait a minute, hydrochloric acid, that's associated with reflux. You know, you're supposed to reduce how much hydrochloric acid you make because that's causing reflux and other problems and heartburn. But in reality, when people are actually studied, the majority of people are not making enough hydrochloric acid, so it's not balancing other acids in the stomach. And when they actually do get supplements with the hydrochloric acid, they do better. The heartburn goes away.
That's just astonishing. Really amazing. Because that was my first thought when you said hydrochloric acid. I was thinking, really?
Right. Sounds awful, doesn't it?
It does. But if it helps.
We think of chemistry lab in high school, and, you know, hydrochloric acid. But, you know, people don't realize that we have little, like little bubbles in our cells and tissues that are filled with very powerful chemicals that will chew up and eat up bacteria that are bad for us and viruses that are bad for us and help us to break down the chemicals that we get exposed to. People, our physiology, our bodies are so powerful and amazing. And that's why I get excited about it, you know, how powerful and amazing people are and all the traumas of various sorts that people overcome and still manage to live wonderful lives.
Just extraordinary. And when you were talking about apple cider vinegar, I wanted to go back to that for just a second. Is that also used for weight loss? As a slenderizer?
I hadn't heard of that.
Okay.
You might know more about that than I do.
Just something, I have all these things in my head that have been told to me through the years, so you just always, like, catalog cards. But I do know that it's such a healing substance.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I would imagine in its ability to help balance the acid-base balance of the whole body and to help the person digest better, it could be helpful in terms of slimming.
Sure, absolutely. If the body's, you know, releasing toxins or whatever, then I'm sure, you know, your stomach gets flatter and you don't have the bloating and all of those things that work. And one of our listeners is asking us about blackstrap molasses.
Good old blackstrap molasses. I know it's a good source of iron. It's a good source of minerals, and that's how I know it.
It's all these things that are so natural and they're so pure from the earth. So we only have a couple of minutes left, but for our listeners, if somebody is just wanting a daily regimen of being well, you know, what are a couple things that you would recommend? The vitamin C, the vitamin D?
Well, first of all, enough sleep.
Okay.
Number one. Number two, a good diet. Lots of vegetables in the diet. Vegetables, protein, a little bit of fruit. If you can eat grains, whole grains, as long as you're okay digesting them. You know, nuts and seeds, those kinds of things. Be careful about dairy products. Make sure that you really do tolerate them. And if the person needs digestive supports, you know, what we were just talking about. And then a good multivitamin mineral and probably some essential fatty acid supports. I suggest people use, by the way, in their cooking, olive oil or coconut oil. They're wonderful oils for cooking, and coconut oil is the most stable, actually, of all the oils we have available. I recommend people diminish the amount of the plant oils, the polyunsaturated oils that have become so popular, because it's very possible that they actually contribute to heart problems and atherosclerosis rather than helping. And as much organic as is possible, because they tend to be healthier and not have the chemicals on them. Very often, I think it's helpful for people to consider some kind of supplement that supports the development of beneficial bacteria in their gut. So fermented vegetables, whether it's kefir or kimchi or sauerkraut or others like that, are tremendously beneficial. Even I don't happen to be a beer drinker, but some beers, the good old-fashioned beers, can be a very good source of fermentation. And that would be a good start on an average basis.
Wonderful, wonderful recommendations and wonderful advice. Truly. And then tell us again how we find you, because I know after listening to this show, people are just going to be so excited. And how many people, I'm sure, are listening to this show and they're just thinking, like you said, I haven't been right since I had the flu 7 years ago, or I haven't been great since, you know, I had my cesarean and, you know, whatever, I had these drugs, or this, I had a car accident and they gave me this medicine, you know, or shoulder injury. And they're just, they never got back on track, or they're lethargic, or they're tired, or they just don't know what's wrong, but they don't feel right.
Right.
And so, yes.
Well, thank you for asking. They can go to my blog, which is called Staying Healthy in a Challenging World.
I love it. I really do.
And another possibility is to go to my website, which is www.kathylipmanmd.com. That's CATHIELIPP, that's two P's as in Peter, MAN.com. They can Google Doc Lip, DOC, that's D as in David, OCLIPP, two P's as in Peter. Those are ways to find me.
Absolutely. And then we have a couple minutes, and so I just want to ask you some basic questions. The emergency rescue remedy, the little stuff that you buy in a tube, does that work? And can you really put it on, like, if you bang your knee or your leg or had a fight with your girlfriend, does it work for everything?
Rescue remedy is a marvelous broad-brained treatment. Yes, it's great. It's a good place to start. And it comes, and be aware that it comes in liquid form so that you can take drops of it. It comes as a cream. It even comes as a gum.
Really?
Yes.
I
and it
no
also
idea.
For people, yeah, for people who have trouble with alcohol, it even comes in a non-alcohol form, which is used for pets.
That's incredible. So that's emergency rescue remedy. And then one of our listeners is asking me a question. It says, is there a truth to idea of not taking vitamins within a time frame of having coffee?
Hmm. Well, I would not wash vitamins down with coffee. That's a very good question. I would imagine if the coffee is irritating for the person, you would have a harder time digesting the vitamins and absorbing them. Beyond that, I don't know scientific basis for that. I haven't
studied. Okay, no, that's perfect. I love when people, you know, send me these questions. And, you know, we only have a couple minutes, but somebody's asking me about sugar substitutes.
Oh, a favorite topic of mine. The only decent one is stevia. Xylitol is not too bad. Just be aware that a lot of people don't tolerate xylitol digestively. The other ones like Splenda and Saccharin and Equal are dangerous. They're like poison for your body, so I don't recommend them. Sometimes the most important thing I've done for people is just to get them off their artificial sweeteners, and they're amazed at how much better they feel.
Really?
Splenda is chlorinated sugar. Now, doesn't that sound delicious? So, Splenda is not splendid.
But stevia is okay.
Stevia is fine. Stevia is a plant from South America. And like anything else, I don't care what it is and what I've said, if something doesn't agree with you individually, it's not right for you. I don't care how wonderful it is for other people. If it's not right for you, it's not for you.
This was, I mean, such great information. Even the nightshades, even as we're talking about digestion and, you know, from the sawbath to make sure you rinse off the impurities. I mean, all of these are just nuggets and gems that certainly, you know, people can use in their daily life for a healthier and better living.
Well, I thank you for providing this information. Most people probably are not aware of all the work that goes into putting on a show like this for them, and you're to be commended and complimented for that. So thank you very much, Nicole.
Oh, no. It's, you know, I so appreciate this information, and it's so vital for people. And constantly, you know, if you're meeting people, and I mean, even the brightness or the luster has gone away from their eyes, or their hair is dull,
mm-hmm.
or they're getting split ends, or their nails are breaking. I mean, just
right.
common things that we hear and see every
right.
day.
Yeah.
But people don't know how to fix it. They don't know how to
yeah.
make it better. And like you said, they'll go to a doctor that'll say you're just getting older, it's just life, or it's whatever it is. You know, you work on the computer, so your nails are, you know, breaking. Instead of, there are people that used to build pyramids and build homes, and their nails did break. So
exactly.
obviously they, you know, they were working much harder with their hands and, you know, and a much more versatile capacity. But right now it's because we're so malnourished or because
yes.
our body is not processing the nutrients we're giving it in the right manner.
Right.
And we're not healthy. And so to find someone like you who can really, as we talked about, look at the whole individual, listen and to really care. You have such a deep sense of care and commitment to the wellness industry and to really helping people. And so I, you know, really commend you on that. And I just highly recommend that all of our listeners find you and really find the tools to be able to lead that kind of life that they know they're meant to live. That same kind of joy, that same kind of when we watch kids run around the playground and they're
mm-hmm.
just so alive. There is such
mm-hmm.
an essence of vitality and strength and invincibility.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it is. And, you know, and here we're afraid to walk stairs. We're, you know, afraid to sit on the
yeah.
chair that's not built well. Or I mean, it's funny. You know,
yeah.
people used to build furniture on their porch and then, you know, you'd sit on it.
uh-huh.
So what you do and how you do it, and I love the fact that you've bridged these modalities, that you've gone from the psychiatry into the wellness, into the wholeness, into the nutritional aspects, and that all of these pieces are integrated within you, and through that you're able to help people in such a multifaceted way and such a powerful way in getting them well. So,
well, thank you very much, and thank you for the opportunity to have this discussion with you.
Oh, absolutely. And so we always ask at the end of every show for a definition. And then, we, you know, if it's okay with, you know, the guest, we post it on our website. And so what would you define wellness as?
Ooh. I think wellness is having a sense of balance in one's life from the standpoint not of not having stresses and not having traumas, but knowing that within yourself you have the wherewithal to meet just about any situation. And if it's physical, you know that you have the strength to respond to that and let your body heal. If it's emotional, you are comfortable with whatever emotions come up that pertain to the situation, and that you have the supports both within yourself and within your community to meet a situation, and spiritually that you have some support. And I think all those are necessary for a true sense of wellness.
That's perfect. Just absolutely beautiful. Well, thank you so much for your time today, for your wisdom, for your knowledge, and for all that you do. And certainly, you know, I highly recommend that all of our listeners reach out to you. And if you are not in this country and you are listening to the show and you still want to be able to reach out to Dr. Lipman, you know, please find her on her website, go to her blog, because the information is really the essence of keeping you healthy and well. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Nicole.
Oh, thank you. Wow. What a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful guest. So lucky to be able to share this information with you. And I'm always learned. You heard me saying that I was taking notes, and I do. And so very often I'll go ahead and I'll write about what I'm listening to so I can share it with even more. Just astonishing, imperative information. And we have a couple guests coming up that I'm so excited to share with you. The long-awaited Lefkos are coming to talk about belief system. And remember, we had them scheduled on the show, and their daughter had a baby in Hawaii, and so they raced off because the baby was born early, and they are coming on the show this month. And they will teach us how to erase your beliefs. Truly, within seconds, you can call in. They will teach you how to do this, how to change your finances, your life, your love, things that are holding you back. They are the top of their field, the Lefko Institute. They are absolutely remarkable. Next week, we have Dr. Paul Sheely coming to speak to us. And Paul Sheely, just one of my heroes on this planet. And Paul Sheely is going to teach us how to photo read. Have you ever seen people that can do that, that can actually capture all of these words at one time, that you can read, you know, a couple books a day and memorize? You can read a book backwards, you can read a book upside down, that your brain, your mind actually can capture all of the information that's in the pages, and how to do that, how you open your consciousness to a higher level. And you don't even have to open the book, you can learn the information in the book. But if you are going to read it, how you can read it at such a high rate and such a high level and retain it for years. Somebody can come back to you 9 years from now and ask you what you photo read today, and you will have full retention of that information. And so he is going to teach us how to do that and explain to us this incredible process. I was blessed. I went to Minneapolis to take his workshop, and I now, you know, can photo read, and I can tell you it has changed my life, my ability to retain and understand. And I would not be able to read as many books and be able to share with you as many incredible guests if I did not have the skill of photo reading. So Dr. Paul Sheely will be here to talk to us about that. Of course, we'll have Matt Weinstein here from Playfair and so many other extraordinary guests. So it's been wonderful having you with me. For those of you who have been blogging, emailing me, and asking me, yes, Saturday, September 28th, I was knighted for my humanitarian efforts in the world, so I am now officially Dame Nicole Brandon, and I look forward to taking that title and doing even more for the planet and the world, and certainly for you, for our listeners. So I thank you for all your congratulatory wishes, all your letters of support, all of you who have followed me through this journey of the process of being knighted, which certainly was, you know, the most special occasion of my life. And now to actually take that and to be able to really step up to a higher level, to be able to be more committed to the world. So thank you for being with us. Thank you once again for our incredible guest today, Kathy Lipman, on wellness and health. Reach out to her, find the tools and the techniques to have the life you always knew you are meant to live. So Nicole Brandon from Unlimited Life, wishing you a wonderful week.